The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So as many of you know, I mean, you probably wouldn't be in this room if you didn't know or suspect or hope, there are many benefits to meditation practice. Some of the obvious ones is while we're meditating, we may feel a certain amount of calmness or relaxation. Not always. If you've been meditating for a while, you know sometimes you feel really agitated and restless too. But somehow you learn that you can survive that. Sometimes when we meditate and we start to get a little bit settled and quiet, there can be a little bit of contentment. May not be our dominant experience. There may just be this little corner of our experience that has some well-being, some ease. It can be great to even have just a little bit of that. Sometimes we dismiss it or we forget that that's even possible. Sometimes with meditation we can calm down and have that. Another benefit is, especially with mindfulness practice, is we can learn something about ourselves as we start to notice, like, oh yeah, wow, I had no idea I was such a planner. That's my own experience. When I first started meditating, I just noticed it was so hard to stay with the breath because I was doing so much planning. I had no idea I was doing so much planning until I started meditation practice. That was good too. Learn about myself and to kind of investigate, and what is that about? Also, we can build some self-confidence. Yeah, okay, I sat through that whole 35 minutes of silence and my knee was bothering me, but somehow I did it. Or I sat through that Dharma talk that was awful, but somehow I did it. You kind of get confidence, right? Like, okay, was uncomfortable, but I was able to do it. So then we kind of stop being so afraid of being uncomfortable. But one benefit that I'd like to talk a little bit more about tonight is that it can affect how we react, how we show up when we're being provoked. Sometimes people don't intend to provoke us. Sometimes they do. Hopefully it doesn't happen very often. But it does happen where we get provoked. Maybe by what's in the news, maybe by what a colleague says, maybe by our partner does that thing again. You know, whatever it may be. So, and one way that we can even determine the effects of meditation practice is to see how do we react when things are challenging, when we're being challenged. How are we showing up? If you've been meditating for quite a while, you may remember how you used to show up. That it's this kind of a subtle shift, like how you show up when being challenged, when being provoked, when things are difficult. It's different after meditating for a while. I certainly can say that for myself. I certainly have so much more kind of stability and ease and spaciousness. Maybe a single word would be capacity. Just increase my capacity to be with difficulties, to be with times that were very challenging and difficult. And let's face it, difficulties and challenges happen. And having a capacity to be with them is a nice thing. It's helpful. So our practice can prepare us, help us to meet with these challenges. And there's a short story that's in the discourses, the Buddhist discourses that I like. I doubt this story is true. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I don't care so much whether it's true, but it's kind of a teaching story. So So there is this person, we call her, she's often the translators call her Mistress Vedehika. And she had a maid, Kali. And Mistress Vedehika, and I think they kind of use that word mistress to kind of differentiate her from the maid. Like there's a status difference there. She had this great reputation. She was described as being sweet, even-tempered, and calm. Everybody thought she's this wonderful person. But the maid had a suspicion that maybe she wasn't so sweet, even-tempered, and calm. She only behaved that way because the maid was so busy making everything perfect and just right. So the maid thought, well, I'm going to test her. I'm going to see. So the maid woke up late one day and didn't do the work. And then the Mistress Vedehika shows up. And as a little aside, I'll say that recently, like within the last year, maybe last half year, there's been a new translator who's been translating a lot of these discourses, Bhikkhu Sujato, who is from Australia. And he translates it this way, that Mistress Vedehika says to the maid, "What the hell, Kali?" I was reading this, like, what? This isn't the discourses? What the hell? I had to go back into the Pali. What is he translating as this? So it doesn't say what the hell in the discourses. This is just somebody trying to make the discourses be relevant that we can relate to. Other translators are just saying, hey, hey, Kali. Hey, Kali, what's happening? What are you doing? And the maid responds, nothing. What's the matter? You got up late. And then Mistress Vedehika, she scowled. So then the maid had the idea, well, maybe she does, you know, not so even-tempered and not so calm all the time. I'm going to get up even later. So the next day, she gets up even later. The same thing. Mistress Vedehika, what the hell, Kali? What? You got up late. This time she yelled, the Mistress Vedehika yelled and said angry words and blurted out angry words. We don't know exactly what the words are. So the maid said, oh, okay, sure enough, she's not so even-tempered and calm, but I'm going to test her even further. I'm going to provoke her. I'm going to push her buttons. Third day, the maid gets up even later. Mistress Vedehika, what the hell, Kali? What? You got up so late. All I did was get up late. So angry and upset, Mistress Vedehika grabbed a rolling pin and hit the maid over the head. So then the maid, with her head bleeding, runs out and tells all the neighbors, yeah, you think that this person, Vedehika, is calm, even-tempered, and what was the other word? Sweet. But look, when she just slight, maybe it's not a slight provocation, I don't know, but with a certain provocation, she's not so sweet. So it's a little bit humorous, this story, to imagine, but, you know, I can relate. Sometimes I'm a nice person, but sometimes when I'm provoked, right, that I get, I'm not somebody that's going to lash out and yell, but I notice, right, that when I get provoked, my kind of get constricted and be less generous, less my capacity, let's say that. My capacity is diminished. So the Buddha is telling this story, and he tells people to abandon the unwholesome and devote yourself to the wholesome. We could also translate this, abandon the unskillful and engage in what's skillful. Stop doing what's unhelpful and start doing what's helpful. These are all different ways that we can understand that. And then he unpacks that a little bit. But before I go to that, I'm going to also talk about another little short story where there was a monk who was associating with the nuns overmuch. I love this word. I've never heard of it before. So one translator says, this monk was hanging out with the nuns overmuch. So when he gets criticized, when the monk is criticized for this, he becomes angry. And also when others started to criticize the nuns, he becomes angry. So he's getting provoked or with these slight things when he's getting criticized for associating overmuch with the nuns. And the Buddha says to him the same thing. Abandon what is unwholesome. Devote yourself to what is wholesome. Stop doing what is unhelpful and do what is helpful. Stop doing what is unskillful and do what is skillful. So he unpacks this a little bit and he says, you should train yourself. So he recognizes, the Buddha recognizes, it's not so easy, right? It's easy to say, oh yeah, stop doing what's unhelpful. Start doing what's helpful. If you already know how to do that, you wouldn't be here, right? If you could just stop doing these things and start doing things that are helpful. So he unpacks it a little bit and says this, you should train thus. So there's an instruction that it's a training, it's a practice, something that we need to work with, something that we can't just do all the time. You should train thus. My heart will not be warped. This is kind of my word, warped. Other translators use the word twisted, perverted, changed, turned away. So my heart will not be, like when you're provoked, my heart will not be either like turned away from the good or from the intention that I have, or turned away from what's happening. I won't just like run away from what's happening. Many of you know that in the Buddhist teachings, the word for heart is the same for the word mind. There isn't this distinction. So we could also say, my mind will not be turned away from. My heart will not be warped, perverted, you know, twisted in some way. And my heart will not be warped, and I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall not blurt out other bad words. Some translators use this word evil, kind of like wicked. So I won't, and kind of utter, this word can also be like blurt out. I won't just say bad words. I shall abide sympathetic for their welfare. Care. This caring about this person who is provoking us. Whether they're provoking us by what they do, getting up late, what they say, speak dispraise of us because of something that we're doing. I shall abide sympathetic for their welfare with a mind of goodwill, with no secret ill will. With a mind of loving kindness, with no hidden ill will, with no inner ill will. So that is, so even though we may not be saying or expressing ill will or hatred or anger, we may kind of like secretly have it, maybe harboring it inside of us. So this is a training, right? I shall train for my heart will not be warped. I shall train that I shall not utter any malevolent words. I shall train that I shall abide sympathetic for their welfare with a mind of goodwill, no secret ill will. Okay, how do we do that? How do we train in such this way? It sounds like a good thing, right? So, for me, I was thinking about this. I think there's two ways that we can train. One, as I said, to increase our capacity for difficulties. But how do we do that? One way is to cultivate ways that promote stability, some steadiness. So what types of things do that? This can be, maybe I'll back up a little bit and say, what do I mean by stability? That is that when things are, when there are difficulties, that we're not spinning out into story, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened, and because this happened, and this means that this other thing, and I bet this person meant that, and I better do this, and it reminds me of that other time, and, you know, right, we can just get into these stories. Or we can also, when we're experiencing difficulties, the different type of stories can be, I'm failing, I'm a bad person, a bad Buddhist practitioner because I'm so angry or I'm so upset about what has happened and I can't let go of this. Also, stability can mean that maybe even if those, we do have those stories that arise, if that's a reaction to what's happening, maybe it's just for a short while. Maybe it's for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half hour, right? Even if a difference, there can be a tremendous difference if we are angry and upset for a half hour, 1 hour, maybe even 2 hours, compared to 1 day, 2 days, 1 week, right? All the kind of things that we can say and do in a half hour, 1 hour is different than what we can do in a week, right? The ways that when we are feel upset, how it colors our minds and the emails we might send, the conversations we might have during 1 week of being upset versus 30 minutes of being upset. So one way to train is to train in stability. Okay, how do we do that? Part of it is mindfulness, just as I was saying. It can help us to just be with what is actually happening. Yes, somebody spoke to me disrespectfully. That's what happened. That's our feeling, maybe I should say. Then we can kind of help, mindfulness helps us to kind of tease apart what was the event from the story. This means that this person dislikes me because of X, Y, Z. With mindfulness practice, we can helps us to be here with what's actually there. This pain in the knee is just an experience. We can tease apart. It doesn't mean that we have to go to the emergency room right now because we definitely, I don't know, right? We sometimes can spin out into stories about physical pain. Sometimes physical pain is true and we need to take care of it. We need to use wisdom there. But sometimes it isn't also. So mindfulness can help us with stability to kind of help us to tease apart what's happening and the story that we have around it. To make a difference between what we're experiencing, maybe it's like a physical sensation, I feel sick to my stomach, I'm so upset about what happened, from the, you know, the ideas we have in our minds. Something else that can help with stability is to just cultivate or practice curiosity, investigation. Sometimes this can help support mindfulness too. What's going on? Why am I so upset? And just with an attitude of curiosity, like, wow, something's going on, I don't understand. Just I'm curious about this. I want to understand myself better. I want to understand the situation better so I can learn how to hold it, so I can learn a wise way to respond. So we can just value curiosity and investigation. But what I'm calling curiosity here is not the same as doing an archaeological dig, trying to find the root of, oh yeah, it's because that thing that happened when I was 8, and then my mother said that, and then my sibling did this. We don't necessarily have to do that. It's just like this curiosity of a willingness to kind of investigate what happened, how am I feeling, what's in my body, what types of thoughts am I having. So that's another way to promote stability. Another way is to bring in some wisdom. We don't always have access to our wisdom when we are provoked, but sometimes we do. Maybe later, maybe not at that moment. If you've been to a number of Dharma talks, you've probably heard of this idea about the 8 worldly winds. The 8 vicissitudes. That is, there's these 4 pairs of things, I'll call them things, and they come in pairs. We wish they didn't, but they come in pairs. So what are these pairs? Gain and loss. We experience both. We will always experience both. It is not possible to have a life that is nothing but gain, gain, gain. There will be losses. This is part of the human experience. Gain and loss. Fame and disrepute. Sometimes Mistress Vedehiaka, she had fame for being, sweet, even-tempered and calm. But then she had her reputation got tarnished. Maybe we do something unskillful and wise. Maybe people misinterpret what we do. But fame, maybe we won't be famous. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll get your 15 minutes on YouTube or Twitter or, these days it's more likely have a certain amount of fame. But fame and disrepute, both of them happen in our lives. Praise and blame. We get praised, we get blamed. Maybe by the same people, maybe not by the same people. Pleasure and pain. Certainly we have both of these experiences. So these 8 vicissitudes, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. The human experience has all 8. I sometimes find comfort in this when I'm experiencing the ones I don't want. Like, oh yes, of course. Yes, I was secretly hoping that I would be an exemption from this. I think many of us are secretly hoping that, right? But it doesn't happen that way. So to create some stability, we can also just sometimes bring wisdom and just remind ourselves, yep, this is part of the human experience. Is that we often, things arise that we don't wish for, that don't match our preferences. We don't have, it doesn't mean we're a failure. It doesn't mean that that all our practice is for naught and that nothing good ever happens. All it means is that certain conditions were in place for these to arise. Misunderstandings, maybe we were tired, maybe we hadn't eaten, maybe we just didn't know something, and we did something that wasn't the best. Or maybe somebody else was tired, hadn't eaten, and didn't know things, or completely misunderstood. So we can add to this list of the 8 vicissitudes something else that the Buddha did a teaching to this same monk that was associating overmuch with the nuns and was getting angry when the people were criticizing him. So the Buddha said to him, Pagaluna, I think was his name, people will speak to you in five different ways. They may speak to you in a way that's timely or untimely. They may speak to you in a way that is true or false. They may speak to you in a way that is gentle or harsh. They may speak to you in a way that's beneficial or harmful. And they may speak to you with a heart of goodwill or from some secret ill will or inner ill will. Some of you may recognize that this is a lot of right speech, some of the instructions on how to do right speech. So often the instructions are for us to speak in a way that is timely and true and gentle and beneficial. But we can think about the other way too. Not everybody uses right speech. We may aspire to. But certainly there are Buddhist practitioners in the world who don't have that aspiration. So people may just speak to us in ways that are harsh, or they may say things that are not true. They may say things at the wrong time. They may say things that turn out to be harmful. Maybe they don't intend for them to be harmful. And they may not have a heart filled with goodwill. I just recently had an experience where right before I was going to be gone for quite some time, I received an email about something that I had to take care of. And I kind of felt like, okay, I'm going to dash off this email to a third person about something and letting them know that actually would have been better if they had done something a different way. I was in a hurry, wanted to get it done before I'm gone for quite a long time. That was not wise. I was not wise. I should have waited when I had more time. I probably should have called up this person and talked on the phone instead of sending an email and then disappearing. Yeah. I feel remorse about this. I feel bad. So sometimes this happens, right? Even with the people that we're intending to practice well, we're intending to take care of other people, but sometimes people do things. They speak when it's untimely, I should have waited. They speak things that are false, harsh, harmful. They don't have a heart of goodwill. So to promote stability, which promotes our capacity to be when we're provoked, we can bring some wisdom to mind. Just recognize that just like there's these eight vicissitudes, there's all these different ways that people can speak to us or communicate with us. And that's just the way it is. Sometimes it's going to be untimely, harsh, harmful, and or not with a heart of ill will, not with a heart of goodwill, with a heart of ill will. Can we just accept that's the way it is? And so our training, what we can do is like, how do we react when that happens? How do we react? And so the Buddha said, my heart will not be warped. I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall abide sympathetic for their welfare with a mind of goodwill and with no inner ill will. Okay, so we can cultivate stability. But what about this last part, abiding sympathetic for their welfare with a mind of goodwill and with no secret ill will? The second thing we can do to train so that we can do that, cultivate an inclination towards wishing goodwill. Make it easier, make it more likely that our hearts and our minds will be towards goodwill. It turns out that this is definitely something that can be cultivated. We don't just have to wait to become a good person. We don't have to wait until we've worked through all our stuff, until we have meditated for so much time that we've somehow have learned about ourselves, and I don't know, like all these things we may have. We can just cultivate this. Many of you will know a way to cultivate this is we can practice loving kindness. For those of you who don't know, there's a number of ways you can practice loving kindness. One is as a formal meditation practice. Just like we practice mindfulness, where we have the intention, often we teach for the breath, and we notice how the mind, when it's wandering, we just very simply bring the mind back to the breath, or whatever the object may be. It may not be the breath. Kind of simple, right? When the mind wanders, we just bring it back. In the same way, we can set this intention for goodwill, and then when the mind wanders, we bring it back for this intention of goodwill. Turns out it really makes a difference. It makes a difference. A lot of people speak about this and how it makes a difference, and there's scientific studies about this. I teach a class on Wednesday afternoons on how to do this. So how do we set this intention for goodwill? One way is that we start where it's easiest, and that often means that we set the intention to have goodwill towards somebody whom we already have some goodwill, and then we just cultivate it and allow it to grow. Somebody for whom the heart can open or there's a certain softening for. So that can either be, often we kind of use this word benefactor, so somebody who has helped us or is a teacher, somebody we may not have a relationship with, but we feel touched by, inspired by, we feel gratitude for, we feel respect, warmth for. Or if that feels too complicated or there isn't somebody that's obvious, puppies and kittens and babies, right? We can bring to mind, right? There's always, I can't help but smile when I think of these, right? There's a reason why cat videos are so popular, right, on the internet. Because there's a kind of a sweetness about it. So we can bring to mind whatever is easiest, the benefactor, somebody for whom you just naturally have a lot of love and care for. Or you can bring to mind kittens, babies, puppies. And then to kind of to help support this intention, we can say phrases. Often we repeat phrases. A sample of phrases are, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you live with ease. And just like with mindfulness, we kind of keep on bringing our attention back to the sensations of breathing. We just keep on repeating these phrases in a relaxed manner and just keep on coming back to them. Often there can be a softening of the heart while if we have in mind still the benefactor or the lovable being. It turns out that, our minds, our brains, there's a certain amount of neuroplasticity, right? The wiring can be changed. And this repeated, inclining the mind this way just makes it more likely that the mind, we will have a mind, a heart of goodwill, well-wishing, sympathetic for others' welfare, caring about them, with a mind of goodwill, not harboring anger and hatred. We can cultivate this. So here we are. Here's two things we can do. The Buddha's instructions were to abandon the unwholesome. I haven't really talked about that. and cultivate the wholesome. And more specifically about cultivating the wholesome, just like my heart will not be warped, my mind will not be twisted or perverted or turned away. I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall abide sympathetic for their welfare with a mind of goodwill and with no secret ill will. If we have stability, if we practice loving kindness, practice goodwill, the likelihood that we will utter malevolent words is greatly, greatly diminished. So these are the ways that we can practice so that when we do get provoked, whether it's intentionally or it's completely unintentionally by somebody, or, you know, we all have certain buttons that get pushed. We may not even know why we have particular sensitivities, but we all do. So we can train, quote unquote, in this way that with some mindfulness, investigation, curiosity, wisdom, bring into mind that yes, there's these eight vicissitudes, just happens to everybody. That can kind of help us keep it in context and prevent us from spinning out. And loving kindness. We can do some formal meditation practice. Maybe I'll add also for loving kindness. Some people, not everybody, but some people like to chant or recite or read the Metta Sutta, the loving kindness discourse. It's chanted very often on retreats. If you go to, we don't chant it as much here, but if you go on retreat or if you were to visit certain places, it would be chanted pretty often. You certainly can find it at the back of Gill's book, his own translation. You can find it online also, the Loving Kindness Sutta. Some people find that inspiring, and it's pretty short. It's written in verse. Something else you can do with loving kindness. So one of the benefits of having a meditation practice is to help support us when we find ourselves provoked. And the ways that we can train to even increase our capacity when that happens. So we have some time now, so I'll open it up for some questions or comments. About some questions about what I said or comments. Yes, maybe we can have send the microphone. Just so everybody can hear.
Great. Volunteering a comment in regards to someone may think, oh, what you just told me, I feel so disrespected. Or that's so very disrespectful, I think was a statement you made. And I've had experiences recently where I never intended disrespect, speaking factually only. So sometimes it helps to rephrase that to yourself and say, oh, I feel so disrespected, because it may not have in fact been a disrespectful statement. It's just, and so then investigate, why do I feel that might have been disrespectful rather than that was disrespectful? Just a small
I agree.
Point
I did,
of distinction.
I did correct myself after that, but I did say initially, I spoke disrespectfully. That's right. Disrespect is something that we feel. And I think it's really important for us to keep in mind, maybe this is part of the wisdom that we can keep in mind, is the intentions and impact. Right, the impact is I feel disrespected. We don't actually know what their intentions were. The impact, though, is this. And the opposite is true, right? We may be hurting other people's feelings, but that's not our intentions, and we just may not be aware that we're having this type of an impact. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that talk. I had a recent conversation with my partner on this exact topic, so it's very topical for us. And the question was, you know, he had felt recently disrespected And he was wondering how he could show up to this person because he knew he would be running into them. And he wanted to heal, and he wanted to meditate and practice loving kindness, but he felt like he wasn't going to get there all that quickly. And he was asking, you know, what do I do if I put on a happy face and smile? Is that being fake? And how do I show up in that in-between where, you know, we might not always have the choice whether or not to see someone? And is there some element of kind of being real versus trying to put on that good face and soldier through it?
Yeah. A lot of this, I think, depends on the relationship with the other person. It's different if it's a boss or is it a friend, right, or a partner or something like this too. But I think what you said is some wisdom in terms of, can we soften our hearts so that our response is not one of so that we can be responsive as opposed to reactive. So reactive is often when we feel hurt. Sometimes we are blurting out words that can be hurtful and harmful. So I think what your partner is saying is that it's taking time, which I think is fantastic, is to take some time with that. I don't think it's helpful to pretend things are different than how they are, and things need to be timely and done in a way that's not harmful. This is a skill. This is a skill, and it is not easy. So often these, especially about kind of respect, gets complicated. And so I think that what this person just said was really helpful, to kind of say, like, I feel hurt, I feel disrespected, as opposed to you spoke to me disrespectfully, kind of, and just and maybe even acknowledge that the intention for the other person, we often don't know. We're imputing, we are assuming what their intentions are, but often we don't know. And so to say, you know, this was a feeling, this is the impact it had on me, and yeah, it depends on the relationship, right, that one has with this person and kind of the context in which this happens. But I think that it's the first thing that you said is important, is taking time and to think about it, if that's possible. It's not always possible. When it's not possible, when you feel like right then, this is for me and a number of people, is really helpful. If you feel like something needs to be said there, start by feeling your feet on the ground. This is such a simple, takes less than a second, tangible thing to do. Feel your feet on the ground so that you're kind of like grounded, and that literally can help from getting spinning out and kind of emotions. So feel your feet on the ground. Sometimes it can be helpful to say, wow, okay, well, I think I need to just pause here for a moment, or say something like this. Or you can excuse oneself, say, I'm sorry, I need to use the restroom, I'll be right back. You can say that. Sometimes what you're doing in the restroom is thinking, wow, okay, what do I do here? Maybe splashing some cold water on your face, right? I mean, we're allowed to do that. I wish I could give some easy answers that would solve all of this. Maybe I'll say this too. You said that your partner had this idea of loving kindness. I think it's a tall order, not easy to have loving kindness towards the individual for whom we feel harmed. You can do it, but it's practice and difficult. But don't underestimate how powerful it can be to have loving kindness in general. That is, to be thinking of puppies and babies and kittens beforehand, so in a way that kind of softens the heart a little bit. Then you kind of go in with this kind of conversation. You may not have loving kindness for this individual, but the heart is knotted up. There can be some softness. Something else to kind of soften the heart can be just doing a gratitude practice. May have nothing to do with the situation, but like, I'm so thankful that whatever a person is thankful for. A third thing that can kind of help somebody to feel, maybe I'll back up and say something else about gratitude, softens the heart, but it also helps us to feel like there isn't such a sense of lack. It kind of, when we do gratitude practices, we start to feel a little bit more like filled up somehow. We feel satisfied a little bit more. And the type of conversations we have when we are feeling satisfied are different than the ones when we are feeling empty and hurt and kind of tight. So loving kindness for wherever it's easiest, some gratitude. Something else also can be service, help somebody. This also kind of fills us up and helps us feel more steady, increases our capacity, those types of things. So these are other ways, things that we can cultivate that helps us to have these difficult, awkward, potentially painful conversations. Was that helpful? And if all else fails, just feel your feet on the ground. So that's like, sometimes we just don't have access, we don't have time, we're just sometimes feeling our feet on the ground, catching our breath, feeling our breath, or something like that. Any other comments?
I think this was very helpful.
Thank you, Mary. Right, I mean, so often, right, our difficulties just arise in our lives, and it's great to be able to have tools and to cultivate our capacity to just be with things. Chances are, as we age too, right? You know, things, old age, sickness and death, it's not easy. It's not easy. Okay. So I wish you all some ease. May you not be provoked. If you find that you are, maybe you find that, oh, your capacity is increasing. Little by little, drop by drop. Thank you.